what we are going to be doing, given that the members are going to be asking you questions for clarity or questions, whatever they want to ask, but the free reign. So we're requesting that you jot them down, and then if your brain can be strong enough to keep all those questions, and then you will respond to them. There is one time they're going to ask questions, all of them, whoever wants to ask questions, and then remember, there's something that I thought just good time to mention. We've got an apology from Janita Tablach. She has had an operation, a neurosurgical operation, so she's not going to be with us until the 10th of it. I think she's one of us. I don't know whether she's still in hospital or she's at home, but if she's in hospital, maybe Shana should help us and organize a trip there. I'm not sure when, because the schedule is very tight. If we can't afford doing that, maybe we have to send flowers or something. We can't send the tea. No, it's not so that we can't send the tea. But we'll have to try that. I think she's safe. I tried to, unfortunately, the diagnosis was written in Africa. Now, in Africa, is very weak. I would have to call Annelie, because she would have visited for me. So it was written in Africa. In any case, I don't think the diagnosis is that important for us. All that is important is to show solidarity. And during this high chance for her, we should show that we are part of it. So you can go over and ask questions. The interesting thing that one day my head, when I was going to become the principal of that, I said to myself, hey, he's going to be in trouble this way. The trouble was that Unama is going to go there to a French university that is well known worldwide. And the reason it's known worldwide is because of its research capacity. But at the same time, myself shouldn't be a social disadvantaged man. I'm going to say, no, it's time for us now to get in there. Yet, when we get in there, we're not going to match the search capacity that was there. So now the balance would be to keep the standard at the same time, bring those that were not on the floor. It's a very difficult balance to do. But this is why we are calling for sober minds. That place is sober, be honest, and know that it's a progress. And tell ourselves that it's a working for the future. We're not going to be emotional about it, but we're working for the future. Those who have had it, they must have a good attitude to accept those who have been put outside the group. Because they always say, if you don't take care of those who are poor, the poverty was, the poor will share their poverty with you if you don't share your wealth with them. You understand that? The poor will share their poverty with you if you don't share your wealth with them. So if you've got knowledge, share it with those who don't have knowledge. Allow them to share. They'll share the lack of knowledge with you. And what will happen to the country? The economy will go down. Human capacity will go down. Remember, it's time for you to ask questions.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by protesting, but first let me welcome the presentation. Mostly I'm covered. Let me say that. What I will say is a protest, Dr. Thomas, as we once highlighted it, and it is not corrected. It came back again. The issue of percentage. You know, you wrote very well to say that you've got the three science centers. Of course, it's much appreciated. But when you go down, you've got the 7% fully equipped. So now you're taking us back to the school. So calculate what is the 11% of the three. I think perhaps let me forgive you guys and go to make sure that you rectify this thing. But they can't pay us. What is that? And we requested to know the location. Where are these centers located? And I believe that we've got, again, Jefferson, 9 provinces, with each province having more than 5 regions. And I believe this 33, sometimes it needs to be in, it must top agenda. This must be in the top of the agenda. That if we can have at least 3,333, it will work. Because here is nothing compared to 53 million we have in South Africa. And number two, I'm still protesting. Number two, we highlighted the issue of sex week. Really, is one week enough for science? The most important subject in the world. I think maybe here we are not taking ourselves serious. Maybe we should propose something else. But I'm thinking that a month it will be good. As science is very important, as Dr. S. Andes, my chairman, to say that, you know, most of us, this thing was hidden from us. That's why we never knew about it. And then number one, I just want to get clarity again. This is not a protest. The page 2, National Development Plan. It says produce more than 100 doctoral graduates per million of the population. Is this million a year or what? And if it's a year, it says a lot. It says a lot, and then you must measure it with what we are doing currently. And but let me get clarity. And it says produce an additional 100,000. I never heard you about it, doctor, when you were talking about it. That's why I wanted to go back and understand. At least 75% of academics with doctoral degrees. Hey, the percentage again. But we should, in most time, go back to percentage. Numbers, please. I understand that the 2018 review of the DST and NRF Centers of Excellence Program highlighted a few issues. Centers of Excellence, when they measure, this will be an evolution of mandates to address innovation term. And the measure of impact to society and industrial innovation should be paramount. I think we agree. But what is being done to involve the mandates of the major center of research? What has been done? And number two, students have no security job. This may being stuck in multiple postgraduate positions with no prospect for competitive academic jobs. No career guidance. What is the department and Department of Higher Education doing to ensure that universities create posts for scientists? As we know that NHLS, in collaboration with universities, are producing scientists or medical students. So maybe we should check what is happening. Maybe you can tell us more. And what is the role of DSET in supporting the
role of Department of Higher Education in supporting the Center of Excellence. And again, the issue of the 2012 Shai Shifa year review reveals that the student bursary stipends are small and the budgetary restriction make it difficult to pay salaries. What has been done to make the budget flexible? And it seems as the Sachi has never consulted the students when they were given a mandate to do some work. It assumes that the small stipends was the only reason for students to leave the system. That are assumptions. What about the issue of supervision and mentorship? I heard that there's been supervised, but it was not elaborated very well. And Jefferson, the last one is not a question, but is to that said. The department has developed the Human Capital Development Strategy for Research and Innovation and Scholarship. This strategy means full citation, especially in terms of the caliber and quality of the majority of science graduates in South Africa universities. So now, and the availability of suitable and capable supervisors and mentors for science students. Then it goes back to the issue of, are we taking supervision and mentorship seriously? So we need to check and to make sure that we close all the loops. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. I think those are the questions that I'm hoping that they have jotted down. It's all about transformation. Are we really transforming our Kirsten?
Thank you, Chair. I'd first of all like to ask just a question or two about the research chairs for clarification. When these research chairs are awarded to universities, for what period is it? Is there a specific time limit? What happens if, for example, if these chairs are not active support? You also referred to 119 of the 157 chairs are active at the moment, but why exactly is it that some of the chairs have been awarded are not active? Then I would also like to ask if it's possible, you don't have to give that to us now necessarily, if we could get it via email or something. I'm very interested to know in the grants awarded to students, especially black students, female students, the distribution among the universities. Whether it's, I'd like to see whether it's only certain universities or typical research universities that get these grants, or also some of our other universities that do achieve these grants. And in chair, just perhaps a few comments, because the last slide that Dr. Appelheimer showed is very important and very worrying. But I think one also has to look at the realities of what universities face today. And it was quite correct by starting off by showing that we start with, when we talk about research, it goes back to the Department of Basic Education. And that what we have at universities these days are students who are not yet fully ready for university study. So your lecturing staff has such a major task of almost catching up on the basic reading comprehension skills, that much of their time goes into lecturing, especially at that group that was referred to, the lecturing and senior lecturing component. They are absolutely bogged down by lecturing the undergrad students with these additional tasks of assisting them to actually study and understand. So I'm not surprised that you don't have more grants, applications for grants there, because you honestly, if you have a class of 600, 700 students, where do you get time for research? So that to me is one of the realities that we will have to look at. But that's, I think, falls within the ambit of the Department of Higher Education and Training. But then my main concern, and I don't know how one would address this because it is also a cross-sector issue. It's all good and well, we supply all funds for these grants and it's fantastic and support for students to do their PhDs and to do postdocs, etc. However, the main challenge is how to keep them in the system. Because the moment you have, for example, a young back student with a PhD, the private sector makes him an offer that the university cannot match. And the same for females. So that to me is one of the major problems that I suppose one will have to address on a much wider platform than really was in this committee. Because we're spending all of the money, we're really trying to create and establish and develop those doctorates, PhD students, but then we can't retain them for research, and that to me is where the problem lies.
Thank you very much, and I think you have hit it on the nail with some of the things. For me, I can't make decisions for Zimbabwe or Zambia because I don't even think what's going on there. But I can make decisions for South Africa instantly because I know what happened. If we don't know, we don't understand what is going on, it's very difficult to have the right diagnosis and the right treatment. And I think this is what Dr. Kumar was trying to highlight, that we need to research that. And it's very true. But we're starting them at a very late age. And then you have to let others be everything to them. It's a very difficult situation. And this thing of private sector is very important. Because the private sector, they want that scheme. And they want to see this, they want to offer more money as long as their bank balance at the end is still going to be okay. And they're investing. And as government, we're just talking about percentages, even not numbers, as people say that we want numbers, we don't want percentages. So I think this is very important, but it's something that we've got to work in together and understand our country, understand where we want to go, and be sober without emotions. We just say, without emotions, let's try and address this thing and analyze them, make a diagnosis, and we'll be able to treat it. I saw that the council had all the income levels. We won't give Nick to talk. He's still very new. So we won't ask him to talk.
Within 20 minutes, we'll ask him questions.
You're going to expect that from the year.
No, thanks, Chair. I think at one of our meetings, the issue of the role of basic education was raised, and I think even now you commented about that. From the input here, it's very clear that there must be a relationship between basic education and science and technology, and of course higher education as well. If you come at the tail end and want me to have an interest in a matter that I was not exposed to, you know, it will take a bit of an effort. I think you could use it, Honorable Kikan, who spoke of trying to make yourself to mold an eyebrow when it's already hardened. You know, it's very, very difficult. In our language, we say, to tell our only role, you know, when you are older and you want to do the things you should have done as a young person, it's always a problem because you will end up becoming irresponsible or you will injure yourself, and the healing process of an elderly person, it takes longer than you know when you are very young. I think there must be an interface between the two because the culture of learning or to like to read, you know, you it must start somewhere and you grow with it. You love books. You can't do what we
make a lot of books now, and to thank people in the facility. There are exceptional circumstances where you find a pensioner going to school, like the diabetes in Kenya, where an old man was going to class with a small kid. It's just an exception to the rule. So I think we need to try and make sure that we integrate the service areas, that is our basic and our higher education together with them. What we want to achieve at this level through science and technology. But that as it may, we commend what has been done since we came in 1994, the dawn of democracy. You see growth. It might not be what we desire. If you look at where we were 2003 and 2012, the growth is not exciting, but you know, it shows that we're going in the right direction. We just need to put a little bit of emphasis in that regard. And I think the historical issues will always pay themselves out. If you look at what is happening in terms of the output from different institutions, you'll find that previously Black universities are performing very poor. For instance, I know that in the University of the North and the UNIVEN, if you look for an engineering department, it's not there. And that is an area which is of critical importance to the economic growth of the country. And their research capacity is very, very poor. I mean, as you were presenting that, you expect a doctor to produce a doctor. When I went to University of the North after I left UWC, I had to do an honors. And the person who was supposed to help me in that regard, only had an honors degree. And the quality of the inputs vis-a-vis what I was getting at the University of UWC, yeah, it was a problem. And the student ended up becoming something else. And you know, you can't progress in that environment. And you end up not proceeding because it is the ecopopulation is like you're underestimating the intelligence of the lecturers while you are not. It's just that from the manner in which things are presented contradicts how it is supposed to be done, and when you come in to show something else, it's a problem. So in such an environment, clearly you will have difficulties. And if you look where we come from, and the what is being said, I don't know how they are going to do it, because they say that the slide number 29, where you say careful implementation of this program is necessary to improve Black participation. I say, oh, what do you mean by that? And how are you going to do it? It's going to be a bit of a mountain to climb. But if we connect it at an entry level, you know, when people go to, a child goes to the world, the outside world for the first time from the confines of their homes to go and start the process of learning, they are taught things that lays the foundation for what they will be like when they go to high school. If that foundation is at entry level, if not appropriate, people were taught the basic wrong. When they go to high school, they can't cope because the foundation was wrong. But of course, sometimes they are able to cut through, then they promote them from one class to the next until they go to matric. By chance, they read the right chapter, they go and get a university entrance, and they go to university. That person will not cope at the university. If they do cope, they won't cope beyond the first degree. The other one, if ever they go beyond that, it will be luck. And when you look at what is the problem with the decline in terms of publication? That's slide number 20. I'm not saying, you know, apartheid was also very dear, but it had an impact. You know, that writing, producing papers and everything, it's something that you, over time, you get exposed to it. You can't get a doctorate because you just, like, there are people who, you know, I know this doctor, but this doctor, beyond the doctor, the doctorate itself, there is no display that, you know, you are talking to somebody with a doctorate. And it is all because beyond writing that dissertation, no publication follows. And it comes back to this thing that, you know, that the 2012-13 there's a decline around those things. What you might also want to know, you know, this decline in terms of our demographics, who is most affected by this? Who's publishing, who's not publishing? Is it African and European people? But it will be interesting to know that. You also had sometimes when you don't write your things in one place, they disappear. One other observation that one has made is that in a university, when people graduate, you only have one person who graduates with a doctorate. If there are two, the second one is an honorary doctor, either in music or this person has is being recognized for maybe in a community that they've been very good community people or as a politician, then you are honored, and you know they are, and the same with the. You are a professor between 2013 and now it's 2014 and 2016. After 2016, you are no longer a professor. So because you have an institution that's just decided, because maybe you were a chair, you are a very good chair, they give you a professorship and you are called professor. You know, those are the observations that you see. And the doctor student who graduates, when you check what the content of the dissertation or what was the dissertation about, it's not something that you can write home about. You know, it's like the introduction of paper must, before I say this, I must apologize and also say that I'm very religious. It has got nothing to do with my religious beliefs, what I want to say. But at high school, they introduce biblical studies. What do we want to achieve with something like that? Of course, I'm not saying that we mustn't understand how we originate. Science is also trying to establish where we come from. Religion as well is trying to explain where we come from. It's important to know that, but we should find a way as a country. You know where those kids go, those the small ones. We used to call them crèches when we, you know, and now they give them some kindergarten, something like that. That is where our problem is starting, and we don't seem to be caring about that section. And I think this, what we are doing at that level and what other countries are doing or other communities are doing, contribute to what we are discussing today. If we want a qualitative change here, it should start at the kindergarten level, that it can go up. Maybe the committee, we through the chair, we can request any interaction with those that are responsible for basic education, because I believe it can fit into that category very well, and we prepare ourselves for here. And I think we can see positive growth in going into the future. Thanks, Chair.
Like this, I said, yeah, so you have to start them.
at that hospital. So he didn't kill the guy. So Morgan married him at kindergarten.
But did you notice with Donald Macari? He didn't even know what to do.
Yeah, he thinks.
He never went through it.
Yeah. Precious. But I also know that some of the questions that we ask you, it is issues that you have presented to us before, some of them. And the issue that you have raised yourselves on the issue on the areas of transformation that you want to see, including the issue of science week. I know he's very energetic. My young brother, he wants to see this science week being a science month, but he only now, we raised this a few weeks ago in the committee. So for me, that it is something that the world education of considering. Probably at some stage you can also inform us of how far we have gone or how far the negotiation and things like that. On the issue of the national development plan, the issue of the 100,000 PhDs, I think you are in the situation, you are in the department, is it achievable by that? If it is or not, what measures or strategies that you put in place to ensure that you try at least to get as far possible as achieving that is if it is not achievable. But and also as a committee, we had committed ourselves to help you in driving and raising the issues of the importance of that 1.9% of the GDP for R&D. And I think the issues of budget processes, maybe the department should have the, and believing that the Department of Science and Technology for me is the bedrock of the whole economy that we want to see improving and total change and transformation of our country. I think Dr. Matthew will respond on, I had written this before, on the leaders of the university, so we had, you meet with them and just to find out the identification process of those who have potential and also those who apply. So how many of them get absorbed or benefit from those grants? But also you find, I'm studying law, but I found that there is now a proliferation of black students into the field of law, and because of that, there is now these issues about the reforms that is not good and what is good, and they actually intensify the curriculum. So it's more either to bar them or to scale them. The curriculum in the three years that I'm there, it has changed so much. And if you look at the previous modules and exams, they are totally different from what it is. So it is something of a concern that we want more respect women, young, whatever, everybody to get into these fields, but the institutions that are responsible, I don't know how they think it's a threat, they try and they try and make it very difficult for those who have that interest to pursue those skills. So I'm not sure of your assessment and that probably that high attrition rate that you spoke about probably is because of some of those areas. As I said, some of the areas I have been covered. There was an issue of the two or three the age on the black female candidates will be prioritized and also international candidates. So two or three will be co-funded with industry. Just probably if you can show us which in particular and how much of the input or commitment by the private sector is there. And then on the 950 fund, it's to external funds. I was just wanted to know this external fund. I'm sure it's an outside government. Is it in the public or abroad? Because I know, for instance, China has got a program where they recruit students to go and do some science things in China. So full grants and bursaries that they offer. And also of the universities, those and centers of excellence that you fund, do you track the performance thereof? One of the other area of research, because much is in the menu looking at to be more on the medicinal area, and so there's an area of the legislative that. That is not taken as an area that needs to be researched. When I was then helping, we were organizing a project of research so that it brings all institutions of research to come. But I left before it was done, so I'm not sure. But for me, for us to be able to have that arm, that legislative arm that is strongly oversight, because we believe that when you have a strong oversight aspect within the legislative sector, we'll be able to achieve the goals that we set for ourselves. Because then this arm will be able to pose correct questions, to check and to ensure that what the APPs and the budget are talking the same language, and that the on quarterly basis what has been statistically achieved is more or less achieved. And it is then also where one would at some stage blame Parliament for underspending or overspending of some of the departments. But that's why I'm saying we need other strong researchers. While I'm on the field, I was in the panel that is in interviewing some researchers. I know, I think it was the human science research that they offered that they will help in the capacitation of researchers. So I'm not sure if that would be the case with researchers of Parliament to be helped, because they focus in different fields of research. And for me, it's that those that are related to science and technology must be capacitated also by the department. Not that they are not capable, but you should also be helped to excel more. These applications for the research grant, because I think I'm not sure if I heard properly that you don't get much or people are not utilizing it. Are they properly advertised that there is this incentive, there is this grant that you can utilize? And like this light speech is that you need to find ways to increase the grants, like 622 in 2013. But just to conclude, you mentioned that some of these instruments, looking at the demographic profile of emerging researchers, is working well for white female students. So why don't you do research on that? On why it's working for the white students, and then use that there's those conclusions or research and the analysis that we come up to campaign the performance of those black and women and men. The Olympiads and competitions, I think it's really important. We would appreciate that we are also informed of these achievers, because they go and compete, they do well, but we don't know, because we can even make statements in the house congratulating them on those good work that they are doing. And lastly, on the slide with the National Science Olympiad Festival, where the learners and public, so for the Olympiad, they zero for the public. Is it closed? Is it zero because it's closed for the public, so they cannot access or they cannot participate? I think I'll end the supporting. Thank you very much.
That's my answer. You know that whenever you bring a new innovation, there's somebody who has been on something, on that innovation, making money out of it. Now those people are going to be paranoid, because there are two problems in this world. It's money and power. If I've been making money on a particular thing, and you come with a new innovation, I'm going to be paranoid that you're going to take over. And if you can balance that, and I think it was coming from this traditional method. Yet it's not saying that you are going to move the other for the other one. It's just trying to build the nation and make it better, even if they work together. But in business, you don't want that. You want to have monopoly of everything, and you will kill anybody who comes up with a new thing. And I'm sure the other things, you'll see one thing and all that. They're going to be bothered about bullshit. That is going to take our market. It's natural, but it's something that we need to work around. And you know, there's something that probably we need to look at the kind of business that I am. You know, my young boy was saying, you know, I just want to go to university so that I can have a degree. And after that, I want to be a tender business. I won't even go and work. I'll just be a tender business. You know, for you, doesn't think that the science is closed. You think that the way to make money is to be a entrepreneur. And probably this is what we've made them to understand. And those attitudes need to change. Natasha?
Thank you very much, Chair. There's a saying, Chair, that says you cannot thank a fish for swimming. And then, furthermore, because you can admire how it moves its body in that aspect. So today I really want to admire the department from where they've come from and the work they've put in. It's really enlightening every time to listen to them when you come here to this portfolio and you see the work that they've done and the work they envisage to do within the department. And to have that kind of commitment within the department is really enlightening, and it's giving you motivation every time to come to the committee and listen to them. But, however, Chair, we really need to, I think, also as a committee, come together and see how we can assist the department, because every time when they come on and pointing out the challenges and so forth, there is a challenge of you can clearly see there is a challenge of finance. And then is it not us that is maybe perhaps a stumbling block for the department in achieving more on the challenges that they want on the goalposts that they have set for themselves? So I really think we need to come together as a committee and see how we envisage it. Assist the department in that light. And then mine is just observations, Chair. They talked about the science week and of course I think Doc, we really need to check when we're having these science weeks that these science weeks are also taken to your greater advantage communities, because I have a photo here of a science week that I just went home in Georgia, and it was held at the Garden Road Mall. And the majority of people that were there on the speed dating, brain thing, was white students. You understand? So, and that is the majority of people that are going there to their home. So what do we want to accomplish to enhance with that is only going to enrich and capacitate, you know, your advantage areas and not taking it down to the root level of your black communities and so forth. So we really need to enrich and see when we are having this science week, who do we want to attract and who do we want to who has achieved or what out of these science weeks and so forth. And then also to the challenges, Doc, I would like, when you guys come and present your challenges, because we don't know your field that well. We are just here to provide our side. So give us interventions, what you think needs to happen when you are presenting your challenges. I would like to see what you say. If you say challenge number one, what is the intervention that you need? So that challenge you have, not every time you come and present the same challenges and same challenges, and nothing are being done to assist you in those challenges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Natasha. You know, Natasha, I think one of the brilliant people in Spartan Garden was Uferfoot. And Uferfoot came up with primary education. And he made us believe that we can't be fingers, we can't be lateral fingers. Those who were not white. As a result, you know, I'm sure most people don't normally, you know, when an aeroplane passes over my home, the one thing that is why I ask for bread. But when it passes over a farm of fair food, the kids, they are asking themselves, how is it remaining in the air? They're not asking for bread. They'll say, how does it remain in the air? Why is it remaining there? They're asking themselves, why is that house? And maybe that's why it was the white students know what the science is all about. The Africans don't know. And I think the whole message is on us, Natasha. Because the BRR, the BRR thing that we've got to do, we've got to start with it. And it's partly issue assistance. Especially if we're talking to a group that whenever we give them money, they use all. There's no money that is left, is unused. If they use it all as we see, and they're doing what, then we've got to make recommendations. And this law, which I think is very important, I never knew that this NRF is a representative. I think you give over money to NRF, and they use it on their own way. I think we need to come close to them. Because it's the universities, no more than, it's the universities who decide where this money goes. The NRF, I think we need to be close to the NRF as to how do they use this money. Knowing our universities, where they come from, we need to get into that space. And the NRF people and the universities, they mustn't be scared about us. We're not going there to kill them, but we're going there to find out where there is a benefit. Malindi, you wanted to say one thing before they come in.
Yeah, sorry. I think the one area that is of importance to me is the intellectual property. We spoke of the Minister of Davis said, I said, you know, I could take off from Switzerland or something like that. The French made sure that you don't use the word champagne for sparkling wine. And Rooibos is ours, so we need to protect that. So, for me, I think it's an important area, because also we end up paying a lot of money to the courts. You know, in the legal field and in the science field, I believe that IP is an important issue, and we need to take it serious and protect what's ours. And also have those that are innovative to protect what they've discovered. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Amber. You know, I'm not impressed by the program, I'm impressed by seeing the numbers. The way you are making comments for us, we definitely understand what they're supposed to do.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. This is a very long list of issues that has been raised. We will do our very best to meet the high standards that you have set in your cross-examination of our presentation. I think we're all eight type personalities in this room. Just on the last petition on the IP matter, to the very best of my knowledge, the Department of Trade and Industry has negotiated restrictions on the use of rooibos as a brand in the US and in the EU, as they have negotiated with us restrictions on us not even allowed to call things champagne anymore or port. I think so. To the best of my knowledge, there has been that intervention, and I think it's probably not just rooibos. I think there's some other issues as well. I just don't know full details. What I would like to do, Chair, because there's some clusters in the comments that have been made, but not nearly as well. The comments are not nearly as well clustered as in previous cases. There's a lot of different comments and questions that have been raised, and often the connections between them are very tenuous. So we're going to have to go through it a little bit like a checklist. But I would like to start off with a few high-level comments and responses that I think may cover some of the concerns that have been raised, maybe not a specific concern, but might present sufficient of a context for a response now. And then I'm going to ask Dr. Matutu to speak specifically to some of the more detailed questions around our instrument, the National Science Week, the Olympiad. By the way, the Olympiad are for students, for school kids only. That's why there's no general, you asked the, I think Honourable Matutu asked a question, they're only for school kids. That's why there's no general public in there. So the National Science Week, the Centre of Excellence, Olympiads, and some of the Saatchi issues. And then I'll try and pick up what I think she might not have covered. That's a good one to do. So just a few high-level comments, first of all. Many of the observations that the honourable members have made go to the heart of the challenge for us, or the problem that we're confronting, and that is that the objective of transforming and growing at the same time, the science system, is dependent on a number of different interventions and not just one. It's like climate change. We would all love it if we could stop climate change by just doing one thing, like, you know, stopping to fly or stopping to drive or no longer using coal. But we all know that climate change is a complex phenomenon with a large range of different contributions. Cows in the field contribute significantly, 4 or 5%. Our cars contribute 10%, I'm making up these numbers roughly. Airplanes contribute 6 or 7%. So no single factor on its own is going to change and stop climate change. There's a whole lot of things we have to do if we really want to change it. And this challenge that we are discussing with you presents itself in the same way. It's not just a language issue. It's not just a violence issue. It's not just a culture issue. It's all of them and more. So we have to identify what are the key factors, because there might be 20 things that focus on this, but only 4 or 5 of them really are the key factors. We have to identify what those are and then determine the proper responses. So many of the comments that have been made by the honourable members are one of the factors in the whole range of things that we have to do something about. Connected to this, therefore, is the point that has been raised also by several members. The Honourable Matala specifically spoke about at length, and the Honourable Maseko too, is the role of other government departments in tackling this multivariate or multifactorial or complex problem. It can't be just the DfT, because we only have a mandate to fight an institution to deal with one of these aspects. The Department of Basic Education, the Department of Higher Education and Training, and there might be others as well, but those are the key ones. So this has been correctly identified by you, that really there has to be an integrated approach to this. And we do have, in fact, a very active and formalized relationship with the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Higher Education and Training. We have formal memoranda of agreements, or memoranda of understanding, or not sure exactly what they're called, but we have documents like this in place for both of these departments that stipulate precisely what are we doing together and what do we have responsibility for respectively. So just to give you one concrete example, we have considered with the Department of Higher Education Training how we should divide up the responsibility around postgraduate research training. And we've agreed with them that our department will be responsible for providing funds for postgraduate research activities and access to research equipment in certain cases. But that's the pedagogic aspects of the content of the training, the quality of the supervision that happens, how well prepared are the supervisors to mentor masters and doctoral students. Those are pedagogic issues that the universities and the Department of Higher Education and Training have to take care of. So that's just one example of how we've separated out our respective responsibilities. With the Department of Basic Education, for example, I've mentioned previously, we have a partnership with them, specifically on the Tofimbaba Science Center, where we have stipulated what does the Department of Basic Education nationally do, what does the Eastern Cape Department of Education do, what does the DFT do. And this is also captured in documents. So we try to systematize our partnership with other government departments in this area of human capital development as precisely as we can. And then we meet quite frequently, particularly with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and usually we meet, in fact, with the Department of Higher Education and Training and the National Research Foundation and ourselves. Because the National Research Foundation sits almost at the interface between the DST and the DHET, which is where the universities are. So we really try to manage this in an integrated manner as possible. Related to this also is the question of differentiation. None of the honourable members used that term, but several of you spoke about identifying the right intervention for specific types of institutions. You spoke about the distinction between WITS, for example, you used that example, and a rural university in respect of research. Now, of course, it's a fact that they're different institutions, have different histories, and different types of equipment and infrastructure that different people, so they cannot be the same. So what we have recognized across the National Research Foundation, Department of Higher Education Training, and other departments, is that we need to tailor our support programs as much as possible to the specific circumstances of different institutions. So for example, at WITS University, they may not need as much support from the DSD and the NRF in building the mentoring capacity of the staff, because the university looks after that in the way that they appoint people and the way that they guide people to jobs and the training they give to. But that might be an important aspect for a historically disadvantaged institution. But if we don't tailor our support interventions to the kind of institutions to maximize the value that it can get from that, we might be ineffective in how we support them. So this requires the institutions to define for themselves fairly precisely what it is they want to do, and then we engage with them on this. And this is done in conjunction with the DHET and the NRF. We haven't done this in a very extended process. We've only started talking about this in the last 10, 12 months. But this is an example of where we work together across those three different institutions. The Honourable Matala raised a concern about a drop in publications from the SACHI shareholders. In fact, if you look at it, Honourable Matala, you'll see that it's more a spike in an otherwise pretty straight line. And it looks as if you look at the past year under spike like it's dropping. It turns out that spike in output was caused by a review that was happening of all the SACHI chairs in the following year. So the research shareholders, they knew that next year we're all going to get reviewed, so they quickly did what they could to publish a lot more papers. So that's why that spike happened, because they wanted to look good when the review comes around. What I can tell the honourable members is that South Africa's research output in published international journals has been increasing steadily for the last decade. And we've more than doubled, I think, over the 10-year period. I don't have the exact stat in mind, but I think it's about more than doubled the research output. So as a system, we're producing a lot more research, and the researchers that are supported by the NRF SEEK and the Karinchi are also producing as a whole more than they used to just a few years ago. So the trends there are good, but I understand why the Honourable Member interpreted this graph the way that he did, but it's not cause for concern. Let me just see what else I thought I might pick up at a high level. As I said, some of the more detailed ones I'm going to ask Dr. Matutu to respond to. One that was raised on a number of occasions, the Honourable Member's desire to see us doing more on our science promotion and science engagement activities. Dr. Matutu will be presenting to you a little bit more about the spread of the National of the Science Centres. They are represented in all 9 provinces, and she's got a list of them which she can forward to the committee secretary, which can be shared, but she'll talk to that a little bit now as well. She'll also talk about the fact that the National Science Week launch is circulated to all of the provinces. And the National Science Week launch, which is a really big event, is never located in a shopping centre in a historically quiet geographic area. There may be individual events that happen during Science Week that might be located there, but certainly that's not a characteristic of Science Week as a whole. But Katima will talk to that some more. Another point that I would like to make is that we agree with the need to and the desire to do more in science promotion. But just to illustrate a point that I raised in a previous engagement with the committee, and you referred to it earlier on, we spend annually more than 99% of our funds. And if I say, I think of just my program, we have in our program responsibility for, let's say, 4 key areas. Human capital development, that's important. Infrastructure, science, engagement and promotion, and some strategic research areas like astronomy, paleoscience, and IKS. We spend all of our money in 4 of these areas. If I want to increase the funding for science promotion and engagement, in the absence of new money coming in, I've got to take it from one of the other 3 areas. There's just no other option right now. So we really try to maximize the returns and the impact that we generate on the investments we make. But ultimately, we can only grow our programs if we get more funds. Now, I know this is a constant refrain, and is very much a key constraint on what this department can achieve, but I do need to say that even if we, you know, even if we've got 4 or 5 times the amount of money overnight, there are still other constraints that exist in the system. Constraints that have to do with interfaces between our department and other departments. Constraints that have to do with, you know, the universities. The active researchers in universities are already supervising somewhere between 5 and 10 postgraduate students. They can't do much more overnight, even if we give them a lot more money. So there are constraints beyond just the money. So I would not want the Honourable Members to be under the impression that that money is the only constraint. It is a key constraint. But there are other interventions that we would also be needing to look at. So this is an important context for the desire of the committee to see us doing more specifically in the area of science promotion and engagement. But once we have finalized our science engagement strategy, which we're in the process of doing right now, we certainly would be at the disposal of the committee if you would like us to come and make a presentation to you about science communication, including the role of our corporate communications department, the section in the department, and science engagement and science promotion more broadly. So we're responsible in our program for science promotion in the sense of using science centers and National Science Week. Our colleagues in our communications branch are more involved in corporate communications, but these things work together. So if the committee would like at some point in the future, we'd be very happy to kind of make a presentation on this. I think it would be of interest. Let me stop there so you don't get too tired of hearing my voice and ask Dr. Matutu to start answering some of the specific questions on the staff she chairs at the Centre of Excellence, and if there's something I've missed out on National Science Week. And then I'll I'll try and pick up if she's left any gaps that I can identify.
Thank you so much. Perhaps do us a favor. The structure, the acronym there, I'm not sure whether it's an L at the end or it's an I. If it's an L, you have to tell us why an L.
Honourable members, I think I will start with the Science Promotion Initiative. Dr. Ofsiheide has already mentioned that if anything, we've been battling to attract white people within the National Science Week because of our focus, which has largely been initially in the learners, including the learners who participate, but now we're also interested in the public, as it has been shown in the slide of National Science Week participation. As it has been shown in this slide, now the attraction of the public in our initiative. The research centers and the donating provinces, Gauteng, the Western Cape, and UKZN. And within the other provinces, you will find out that they are partly situated. Eastern Cape, for instance, one is the Eastern Cape, one at the University of the Forte. So we're talking about just two. However, a lot of activity within the Grandstand area with the Africa Science Festival. So, rural areas, Venda, we have a number of them. The universities are quite crucial. We are using them enormously for science promotion activity. They host most of the science centers, and we've observed that those which are located within the universities tend to be much more sustainable in terms of the salary of the people who get paid and also the ability to attract the learners that we are interested in, particularly specific things for the university and also for our own activities. So, however, because National Science Week is not just about science centers, there is a lunch which we have. We had it about 2 years ago at the University of Forte, and almost all learners there were black, and the few that we had who were white, our PD complained that there were few whites. And the next one we had at the University of Johannesburg, which was in Soweto, the launch, and that attracts about 5,000 people, the others together with the learners. And UJ in Gauteng, we had a reasonable number of white learners. And the latest that we've just had, attracting 4,000, was in Mangaung, just outside the Free State, what is that? Bloemfontein, yeah. And there as well, the domination was the black people. So, our outreach activities, by and large, when it comes to the National Science Week, target and also we reach out largely. I've been trying to get some photographs from the an event that I attended for Science Week when we were promoting mathematics to the learners. My doctorate is in mathematics. So, I tried to open the thing up, the photograph from the thing. All black girls from the Western Cape area, about four from each school, the key people leading, the dean of science, the University of the Western Cape, together with the professors there within the education, sorry, dean of education within the, and then the professors in physics education and mathematics education. Okay, now Dr. Afsiheide is mentioning that we reach close to 4 million people through our National Science Week through media over and above what has been mentioned here. This is just the physical contact, not necessarily what we reach through radio, television, and so on and so on. So our current communication is saying that we reach even more through that. However, not only Hunky Dory, we can't have in the Eastern Cape only two science centers that is not on. And which is why we mentioned at this slide here that we still have a problem when it comes to science promotion. If we have to have the proper impact that we require, we have to get this legislation right, we have to get National Treasury funds, and then we can talk about something which is much more bigger. Right now we're finalizing the science and vision strategy, and that should enable us to have a proper plan, and the structural arrangement within the National Research Foundation should enable us then to say that if we put in this money, we've got the capacity, we've got this or the other to be able to. What we're doing now is very good, but it's at a small scale compared to what we need as a country within South Africa. Then moving on to the centers of excellence. The question was the role of the Department of Higher Education and Training in support of centers of excellence. So on that front, the Department of Higher Education and Training is not funding centers of excellence. However, I mentioned that the centers of excellence are pulling existing excellence. That existing excellence, which is being pulled together, is funded by research funds. Those people are being paid using salaries from the head. Those are not our salaries. We only fund a little bit on top to make sure that we're able to put all of that together. As I mentioned, 10 million registers, not adequate for the what is being provided there. And then regarding the positions for students at universities and creation of posts, honorable members, what we forgot to mention is that we have quite a number of programs. We didn't put them together. We just lumped everything as emerging sessions. We have about three different programs which are looking at workplace experience for our students. The first one is the internship program, which was not even mentioned in our slides here. We have about 1,000 of these people who have science degrees. Now we've just added humanities and social sciences in that category. And we place these in science councils, we place them at universities, we place them in private sector companies, and we want to make sure that we don't lose them just because they were looking for positions. We keep them 1 year's experience while we pay them stipends. The second one is a professional development program, where we look at people with an honors degree, a master's level, who want to, who feel that they cannot do without working. We give an experience which is research-based, either at science councils or at universities, and those who are doing PhDs as well, this professional development program, give them that while we pay their salaries. And the expectation is that in the end, they should be able to be absorbed by the institutions where they are doing some work while gaining the PhD or master's qualification. And then the third category is the one that I mentioned of the Career Development Award. So that is the biggest one in terms of our investment. It's just that it, where we are looking at people who have completed at least 2 years of postdoctoral training, who are clearly showing signs of being potential researchers who need to be trained to the next level, and to ensure that, unlike what the honourable member mentioned, where members overloaded and teaching, so we're able to do research and establish themselves properly while doing very much teaching. So these three programs are assisting in ensuring that some of the students that are being trained at universities are given opportunities for being placed in the workplace. Then the 5-year review of centers of excellence, some of the results on salaries, which were small, but very values, and so on. Dr. Afterhide has mentioned the increase in the bursary values that we have had as a system. So we are working on that. They are not ideal. However, over the past years, they've grown substantially. And the centers of excellence, we had the program supposed to be a 15-year program altogether. We have a 5-year review, which was really praising this center of excellence about the work that they were doing. And initially, the intention was to have them as 10-year instruments, but it has since been expanded by Minister Pando for another 5 years. And what she has said to the Center of Excellence is that focus a lot more on ensuring that the fund that the department gives to you gets shifted more to research and more to student funding rather than salaries. Then that way, that means that we are weaning ourselves gradually off the program while ensuring that the Center of Excellence continues to work. So other sources of funding will have to come in for salaries from universities. This is where the DHEAD funding comes in. And the period of the South African Research Chairs Initiative is 15 years, so it's 5 years renewable for up to 15 years for the South African Research Chairs. The question was why we had, why are some not active? They have recently been appointed, but why they were not active? So they could not be counted for the 2014 financial year when we're checking students and all. So they are still setting up. That year was still setting up. And then,
Chair, then I'll just pick up one or two things, specific issues, while the team gathers their thoughts around some of the others. Just continuing with the issues raised by the Honourable Montreat, the question about the dissemination of bursaries across different universities. The NRF distributes bursaries through three essential channels. The first is an open call where students from across the university sector apply for assist grants to the NRF. The NRF has a selection process which they then use. So that's the one. I'm quite certain that students from all universities apply. I don't know the exact figures of the applications that we could get, but I'm quite certain it's distributed across the system. The second route through which the NRF provides student bursaries is as part of a research grant for a senior researcher. So a senior researcher, professor at any university, can apply to the National Research Foundation for a research grant, and as part of that research grant there's a budget for a student bursary, and then those supervisors determine who to give the bursaries to. And in as much as any researcher at any university is free to apply to the NRF, and there are researchers from all universities who apply to the NRF, therefore through that channel also NRF funds a channel to all universities in the form of bursaries. The third way in which the bursary funds are moved is that the NRF provides to, I think, all of the universities. There may be one in KwaZulu-Natal that I don't know if they get bursaries in this route, but otherwise everyone else does. And that is that it gives the universities a blocked grant and attached to a certain guidelines and criteria that the universities then have to apply in selecting students from within the university to award these bursaries to. So these are the three, and all three are in principle and in practice being accessed by all universities across the... Of course, the distribution of the bursaries will depend on the quality of the applications and on the quantity of the research students that are sitting in the different institutions. Then you spoke also, Honourable Trick, about the constraints on teaching staff and how that impacts on their ability to absorb new postgraduate students, because they've got to spend so much time teaching the undergraduates. In part, I'm sure you're right. That has been my own experience when I was still an academic at the university. But I'm saying in part because it's also been my experience that generally the most active academics at the teaching level are very often also those that have most energy at the research level. It's not true in all cases. There are some,
who really just do the undergraduate teaching and they have no interest in the research, and there are some who only are interested in the research activities, but the large majority, if they have the energy and the spirit for one, they have it usually for the other as well. And so I think it's a constraint, but I'm not sure that it's a key constraint. Just anecdotally, I spent a year as a postdoc at a leading U.S. university a long time ago. And when I was there, I discovered that all the senior professors taught first-year students. Exactly the opposite of my experience in South Africa, where all the senior professors only teach the postgrads and try to lead the undergraduates to all the junior staff. And I was very surprised when I started making inquiries. It turns out that the professors there believe that it's in the first year that they recruit their future research students that are going to join them 4 or 5 years down the line to do a PhD. And that's where they want their exposure. This is a completely different mindset to our universities, where this is often seen as a burden. And if you're low down the feeding chain, you end up having to service that burden. I'm not saying it's like that in all cases, but certainly there has been a time in the past where that was often what informed the distribution of teaching loads. So that does need to be changed, and this connects to something that the Honourable Maseko, I think, was asking about, is the extent to which we engage with the universities. These are the sorts of things we do discuss with universities. Perhaps we don't meet as frequently as we might want to with the universities as a sector, but we work with the Department of Higher Education and Training as a proxy for the universities to sector quite frequently. The question about the National Development Plan targets, Honourable Maseko is regrettably not here anymore, but I think it's useful perhaps to the members anyway. The targets Honourable Vikana asked, these 100 PhDs per million of population, it's an indicator, Honourable Vikana, like saying there are so many doctors per million of population in this country. And generally that's taken as a sign of a good health system or a not so good health system. Or the number of engineers per million of population. It doesn't mean you produce that many graduates every year. It means that on average in any one year you have, 200 doctors per million of population or only 50 doctors per million of population. And in the same way, the National Development Plan suggests that as a measure of our ability to become innovative as a society, we should have 100 PhDs per million of population if we want to be really a knowledge economy, if we want to have innovators in the system, in the society, because PhDs are seen as being closely linked to innovation. The other target which you mentioned, 100,000 additional PhDs, that's a real number of people PhD graduates we should generate between now and then. So if you figure out that we've got roughly 15 years and you divide 15 into 100,000, you can see that we need to generate at least 7,000 or 8,000 PhDs per year starting now if we want to generate 100,000 new PhDs by 2030. We're only at 1,800 PhDs now per year. So what we can do is we can begin to ramp up, but it means that towards the end of this period we must be generating 15 or 20,000 per year if we want to catch up with not being there right now. So the question that was asked, I think, by Honourable Maseko was, are these targets achievable? I think they're ambitious, but I do think they're achievable if we really focus on this now as part of our national transformation in the broad sense, national transformation ambitions. And I have faith in the ability of South Africa to do these things. I can share an example where we've done this. We've turned the tide in AIDS. Once the question of political leadership around AIDS was sorted out, the different sectors of society, the public sector, the labor movement, the private sector, and the NGO sector, they got together and we've turned this tide around. We have decreased the number of the infection rate, and so we've really gone 180 degrees in dealing with this, and it was a national effort that was laid from the top, and all social actors got together and we managed to do it. I believe we can do the same thing with education, but not if we don't do it like we did with HIV. So it really needs that kind of a national effort. And this one now about the PhDs is a subsector of the bigger education transformation challenge that we face. And I've got faith that we can do it, but we've got to do it at the scale in which we dealt with HIV and AIDS. So I think that targets are ambitious, but I think they're achievable if we really want to achieve them. We as a department are ready to play our part in this, but we need Treasury to play its part. We need higher education to play a part. We need the parliamentarians to play a part. We need the universities. So this is the determination that's necessary, and I think that with the end of AIDS, the different sectors were able to bring that determination to the table. But here, do you want to just perhaps think of a few more things?
That they create sufficient costs in the university to retain
staff that are graduated in South Africa, graduated and trained in South Africa, while also recruiting people from abroad, because you don't want to just have South African inbreeding. You also want to have new knowledge coming in from abroad. So this has to be managed by them. We do provide support to them. We fund new posts in that system to help with this process. But the other sector that we're producing PhDs for is for the private sector and for the public sector. The public sector is a massive employer in South Africa, and it also needs PhD level skills. So that's the approach that we're taking to our PhD program. Another thing that I learned when I was in the U.S., in part a philosophical thing to end off with on this issue of PhD training. In the U.S., when I was there, I looked at the incoming students for the new PhD class, and they put pictures up and the names where they all came from. And it turns out, and this was back in 1990, one-third of the new PhD class at this leading U.S. university, one-third came from mainland China in 1990, 2 or 3 years after the Tiananmen Square massacre. I mean, that was when China was not just beginning to open up to the rest of the world. One-third of the class was already from mainland China, and I started making investigations. It turns out that Chinese have a very different approach to this. They don't expect their citizens to come back within a year or two after graduating abroad. They take a long-term perspective on this. They say even if they stay in California or wherever, they'll never forget their Chinese. They'll never forget the links that they've got. And this, over time, this feeds back to us. Now, I'm not suggesting we can afford, because we don't have a billion people. We can't afford to take that long-term a view on our investments. But I think it's important in the area of science and research to have a longer term view than 2 or 3 years. These are investments you can't reap real benefits before 10 years. It takes 10 years to take somebody from a first student to a PhD. And then, you know, you only start really reaping your benefits when they've been in their job for 5 or 6 or 8 years and they begin to guide students and so on. So it's a 10 to 20 year investment. Thank you
very much. I just have a question.
Thank you very much,
Department. It's a pity that time is against us, but justice was in meeting time again. A question of national, and this is what makes some of us to behave about the national development plan. Those are certain things that probably need to be said, but that long term approach on things and looking into the future. I think this is all about nation building, and the GST is key. Probably many people don't know that. And the impact is on economy, is on education, and all around GST, but I think a lot of us don't understand that GST, Department of Justice Economy, is very important. We're doing oversight, we're overseeing you, but having listened to you, we appreciate. Even this people who are successful. As much as we are impressed with what we are, we still have to go and look at the areas where we are to see whether our success is successful. And the point is that we're going to do that. And that's actually, we think the NLF is one area when it comes to human capital development, where we've got so much. Because especially that you give money to the investors and investors. They've got their own autonomies, and we've got a history with the university. Not only the history, even the intra-university problems, we've got to look at those. They said, thank you very much, member. In fact, what impresses me is how you've taken science and technology with passion. The same passion that I'm seeing in the department. That's why they don't even want to talk to me. That's only because it shows the passion. And I think even the members have got the same passion when they come to you. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, Department. Even the people who are sister, thank you very much. We're going to take this, there's a tea, which is very, very nice. We can take it, and I know some of the members will give flowers to some of the females. And that's how it goes out. Thank you so much. article of conventions is very different. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your time.